John Gambling with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
10 minutes after 8 o'clock. Happy Friday, everybody, and a good morning to you, Mr. Mayor. All of the same. Good morning.
Good morning, but some sad news this morning. Woke up this earth. 8.9 on the Richter scale is a very big earthquake. In Japan, they have a lot of earthquakes, so their building code is very strict. You build buildings that don't fall down in an
earthquake. That's why what has happened over there is so unusual. Refineries have blown up and exploded. Yeah. The nuclear power plants have a problem.
Yeah, a lot of fires, and airport is closed. You can't get in or out. The big threat is a big tidal wave that comes, it gets generated, called a tsunami, scheduled to hit Hawaii
right now.
Yep. And Hawaii just had its own earthquake. Not anywhere near as strong, but...
And also Kilauea is erupting again on the Big Island of Hawaii.
Right?
Yeah,
you know, it's all...
Yeah, the one thing, you and I have talked about this before, my reaction to what I've been watching all morning long since I awoke this morning in this earthquake is just the magnitude of the energy involved. And for us human beings to suggest
nature's pretty powerful,
scary.
The biggest nuclear bomb, all the bombs together, don't add up to the energy in something like a big earthquake. Probably some of them are like that. If anybody wants to donate money to help, and I don't know that they need money yet, but if they do, the Mayor's Fund will arrange for public monies to be sent over. We did that with the earthquakes in Haiti and Chile, and we would do
you
that.
You go
with
to nyc.gov? Or is there another place to go?
Everything goes to nyc.gov or 311. And also, remember, it's this Saturday night, we turn the clocks forward, spring forward, fall back. But also, that's the time to check your smoke detector. Check you have one and that the batteries, change the batteries. A couple weeks ago on Drew Street in East New York, an electrical fire broke out, and a 43-year-old NYPD traffic agent died in the fire. Something like 70% of all fire-related deaths occur in homes that are not equipped with a smoke detector. And, you know, there's no excuse, even if you don't have money. The fire department has 75,000 batteries donated by Duracell to the FDNY Foundation, and they'll be distributing them at 5 locations over the weekend. Once again, call 311-91-NYC.gov. But it really makes an enormous difference. And... you know, we only had 62 deaths last year by fire, which is the record who knows what happened before we started keeping records back in the early 1900s, 1910, 1920, something like that. But 62 too many. And a lot of those literally could have been prevented. You have a smoke detector, it goes off, get out and close the door behind you so the fire is contained.
That's the important
thing. Those are the two things.
Yep. All right, you have brought along a guest here, and you have anticipated one of my questions for this morning. It has to do with the Advantage program and the homeless program here in New York City, where I read reports it's going to be cut dollars and cents-wise, like so many other things. And Seth Diamond is the head of this division. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
All right, what is the Advantage program, and why is it being reduced, or is it being eliminated? I'm not sure where you stand.
Well, the state budget proposes eliminating it, and that would have a devastating impact on our city's shelter families. Advantage has been a very successful rental subsidy program. It's helped over 20,000 families move out of the shelter system. It supports people who are working. In order to get it, you have to be working. So it sends the right message that we want to support working people. We want to move them out of shelter into the community. And ending Advantage would be a real setback for the tremendous progress we've made.
Homeless Services, his agency, you know, is part of this group of agencies. What we're trying to do is give people a hand up and not a hand out. And so you have to work for this. Some of the advocate groups don't like this program, believe it or not. They want to cancel it because it requires work. No, it requires people to work.
Oh, I see.
But I think the incentives are it's the public's taxpayer dollars. Some people can't work, and those people you have to help anyways. But if you are able-bodied, why should people who are working support you unless you do something for yourself? Now, a lot of people try, and just the luck of the draw, they don't have the abilities and that sort of thing, so they can't make enough to live, and that's why I've always been in favor of programs like Advantage that help. What Advantage does is there's about 35,000 people in shelters, singles and then families. They just have no place to live, and we're not going to let them sleep on the streets. But we can't have them sitting there forever and support them. So we try to move them out. We try to help them get jobs and then find apartments. And this Advantage program gives them a subsidy on that apartment. And it's a lot cheaper for us to do that than to pay for them to stay in shelters. So this reduces our expense. It moves people back into the workforce, taking some jobs that they don't pay a lot of them, but we need people to do them, and this lets them afford to do those jobs. And Seth has really made a big difference in this agency in making sure there's no corruption, making sure there's no waste to the extent you possibly can, making sure we're as compassionate and humane as we can, but at the same time insist on people helping themselves.
How many people, Seth, would be affected, do you think?
Well,
there
are 15,000 people right now in the city that are in apartments that have taken the step moving out of shelter. The overwhelming number of them are working. Those people are at risk, and we have people behind them who are trying to move out of the shelter. There are 3,000.
They'd be cut off completely.
Right. There are 3,000 people right now who are qualified who could get this rental subsidy and move out in the next weeks, and they're going to get those Advantage qualifications yanked from their hands. This will cause the shelter system to back up. We may have to build 70 new shelters throughout the city to be able to accommodate all the people that won't be able to move.
The city law requires a shelter to provide a bedroom, kitchen, and bathroom, private families,
that's right.
For a family shelter, not for the single shelters, for the family. The state requirements aren't anywhere near as much. You could share a bathroom. You have to have your own bedroom, I think. But regardless, those are the laws. And it's hard to cite shelters. Nobody wants them in their neighborhood. They're expensive. We will have a lot of capital costs to get those done. But the law says we have to. People under the law have a right to shelter. So and the standards of what that shelter is. Whether you agree with the law or not, that's it, and we have to live within the law. So Seth is going to have to find locations very quickly to fix up and turn over into
How
shelters.
How much money are we talking about?
Well, it's millions of dollars. It'll cost us more if we don't have the program than we do.
What do you normally get from the state for this?
If we don't have Advantage, we'll end up paying $80 million more than what it costs us with the program.
Yeah, because so we will have, without Advantage, our share of Advantage goes down if it goes away. Some of it's state money, some of it's federal money. I think it's state's about $65 million
That's
a
right,
year.
Yeah.
Federal's another 40-odd million, and then we put in 50-odd million.
A lot of money.
A lot of money. But the trouble is, if Advantage goes away and we can't afford to do it only on our own, then we've got to go to the shelter system, and a lot of that is our money, and there's capital costs to build as well as to operate. And, you know, we've been trying so hard to reduce the shelter population. We made this, we set this objective that we were going to reduce the shelter population dramatically. Given the recession and what's happened in people needing shelter, thank goodness we focused on it, but we certainly didn't meet our target. It just, went in the other direction. But without all of our efforts, it would have been a lot worse.
All right. Well, Seth, I hope you get your money.
So do I. Thanks very much.
Not so much for you, but for the people that
need it. No, for the people we serve. This would be devastating without it.
Exactly. Seth Diamond, City Commissioner for Homeless Services. Mr. Mayor, sit tight. We'll come right back here in just a second. Again, a reminder that we've also got some tweets. And I hear we got sort of tweeted last week on one of them. I read in the paper on Saturday after our get-together. There was allegedly one that was a scam.
Well, I saw what it was.
Listen, we answered the question they asked. They just dropped the profanity from the beginning.
All righty. We've got more of those, and hopefully your phone calls get in line. 24 after 8 o'clock. Get in line, 800-321-0710.
You know who's in line?
Who is in line?
There's a guy I met last night on Staten Island, one of your loyal listeners, a guy named Dominic D'Ambrosio. I didn't ask him whether he listened to your father or grandfather. He didn't look old enough to have done that.
That's good. We like him young.
Well, I wouldn't say he was young, but he was younger than you and me.
All right, Dom. Thanks a lot for listening to me and to the mayor here on our Fridays. This is not terribly important, except that I understand your Hollywood career has begun with the debut of the Adjustment Bureau with Matt Damon. That you are in this?
Well, I think, when the producers and the director got together and talked to Matt, they needed a real rugged superstar to carry the day. I play the part of a New York City mayor. which I took 9 years to practice for and get ready.
I think
it lasts about 9 seconds. But I'm sure it will make the movie work.
I understand that you were in another movie.
Sex and the City.
But you didn't make the cut.
Kathy Oliver and I, we had these cameo pieces. We kept walking in. We did 1,000 takes, and then they left on the floor. Some wag said, yes, they wanted more sex and less city.
I got you. And that's what they did with the razor blade. You've been wagging your finger and shaking your fists at the taxis that don't take people where they want to go this week.
You know, there is a set of rules. If you want to drive a taxi, you have to agree to take anybody, any place. And it's just plain and simple. We are not going to allow people to pass somebody up because they don't like what they look like, or they don't want to go where the potential customer wants to go. And it's posted, the rules are posted in the cab. The cab drivers acknowledge them when they get their licenses. We've actually started to have David Yaske, the Taxi and Limousine Commissioner, has been very aggressive. He hired some Baruch College students to pose as passengers and sort of cigarette shoppers, they would be called. And then we fill in some of them, and we're asking the city council to raise the fines. Because if the fines aren't big enough, people just disregard them and say it's a cost of doing business. But if you ever get denied a ride, call 311 or nyc.gov, but get the medallion number on the top of the cab. It's easy to see. Just write it down, and then we can go. And if you make a mistake, we'll catch that because of GPS, we know where the cabs are. But you know, we probably can figure out even if they don't flip the meter, because we'll look for the next thing. But the rules are they got to take you, period. There's some exceptions, but you don't have to worry about that.
I think I read a couple of weeks ago that medallions are now going at auction of over $1 million.
This is a phenomenally lucrative thing for cab drivers. And what we're trying to do is to figure out a ways to get yellow cabs, or maybe you could paint them another color, outside of Manhattan, because the vast, vast, vast bulk of trips and yellow cabs are in Manhattan. So if you're in Staten Island, Queens, Brooklyn, the Bronx, you can go outside. You will not find a cab coming by, or it'd be very unlikely to do that. And there are lots of black cabs that aren't regulated, that aren't supposed to stop, and do start. They are regulated, but not the same way. And they do stop, and they break the rules. So we're trying to come up with something that makes sense so that we can get better service throughout the city. But this is not about that. This is about the service that we have, and it should be available to everyone, period, end of story.
All right. The people in Times Square and along 7th Avenue are not very happy about the decision to move the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade to 6th Avenue. I read in the paper there's some negotiation going on now, maybe to leave it where it is?
No, that's not going to happen. The parade comes down Central Park West, goes along Central Park South, right now, and this coming November, goes down 7th to 42nd Street, a crossover, and then down 6th. Macy's, who pays for the parade, wants it to go down 6th. It's a lot safer. Remember, the balloons knock over something. If somebody got badly hurt, and Macy's been arguing this for a long time, and it is, they're paying for it, so you got to listen to them. They.
So this was Macy's decision to change the route.
No, it's the city's decision, but Macy's kept asking for it. Times Square is a problem because the Times Square Alliance wanted us to do some construction down there, which we're doing, but during that construction, which will last for the next couple of years, you couldn't run it down there anyways, unless you had all sorts of precautions, and it would just be a dangerous thing. The police department thinks 6th Avenue is safer. It's a much wider street. It's straight. You don't have to, the turns are where you get the problems. And, you know, the hotels, I'm sympathetic. The hotels and stores in Times Square say, you know, they would lose business, although their rooms will be full. They just may be able to rent them for a lot more so you can look out the window and see the parade. But there are hotels on 6th Avenue who want the business, and we can't pick and choose. Macy's wants it. The police department says it's safer. Our Office of Emergency Management says it's safer because there are fewer things. So what I agreed with Macy's was this year, Times Square. The next 2 years during construction, 6th Avenue all the way down, and then we'll talk about it.
Okay, that's that. City Council has a whole bunch of new rules they would like the mayor's office to follow when it comes to snow. And I've gone over these myself. We've talked about them here on the program. And I understand that most of them, if not all of them, are things that you don't think are probably necessary.
Well, look, we didn't do a good job with the big snowstorm. You know, the time of day and a lot of people getting stuck, and maybe we could have done things better even if those weren't the cases. And you always look to see what you can do better. And the city council listens carefully to a lot of people, and we've worked with them. You know, most of the 16 bills that they propose are good ideas, and we're doing it anyways. What you really don't want to do is to have so many laws on the books that restrict the agency's ability to do the best job they can. No matter what you think about the past one-time response, for 9 years, the sanitation department's done a great job, and they have to be flexible enough. The next storm is never going to be like the last storm. Everyone is different, and so we really don't want to legislate how to run an agency. That's just not good. No good government. I know the frustration. I'm sympathetic. I'm frustrated as well. As a matter of fact, I'm probably more frustrated than anybody. But nevertheless, we'll continue to work with the city council.
All right. So it's fair to say that if those became law, they would maybe be vetoed?
Much too early to tell, but you know, you don't veto very many things. In the end, you pass laws that generally the mayor is going to support because both ends of City Hall work together. There are sometimes that's not true, but generally, this city council, you know, we've done an awful lot together, and they deserve a lot of credit for a lot of the good things. And you know, I'll take the grief for the bad things. But all kidding aside, Chris Quinn and the other 50-odd members of the city council, I think, serve the city very well. They are much more open in terms of hearings and the laws. Their ethic rules are so much better than, you know, you look up state and...
you don't want to look up state.
Right. I mean, this city council deserves a lot of credit. I've always given... I don't agree with them on everything, but...
All right. Hang on, Mr. Mayor. It's 8:32. We have to take our half-hour break. Don't forget your turn with the mayor coming up, 800-321-0710, if you've got a question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Interesting story that I was reading about Comptroller Liu talking about how much money, the differential between public and private employees, and it was my impression in this world of today, generically speaking, that the public sector was, on average, making more than the private sector employee. He came up with the opposite.
Well, it depends on how you, which part of his study you look at and how you define what the comparison is. His study showed that people with less education, they made more in the public sector. People with more education made more in the private sector. And it's true, a doctor, an investment banker, that sort of thing, certainly would make more than in the public sector. If you're a lawyer and you want to work in public sector, you're not going to make what you could. If you're a lawyer at a fancy white shoe firm. But I think the problem with the study was, more than anything, number one, it didn't include pensions.
And health care
for retirees. I mean, you know, it's given that it's and copay, which you do in the private sector, and pensions in the private sector aren't guaranteed, whereas in the public sector they are. So the comparison was, I didn't think, a fair one. Look, I've been a big believer that you want to have a well-paid workforce. I've always tried to, whether it's my company or the city, pay well and expect them to work hard and be flexible. And I think we have that deal fundamentally with the city employees. I've defended the city employees, some we can't afford. And sadly, we're going to have to downsize. But nevertheless, you want people to focus on their job, not how they're going to focus on their family. And you can have a very good career in public service and make a decent living. And in many cases, if you include pensions, which is some of these people, there's the joke that you go to work for the city for the pension. It's so good. I'm overstating it. But the bottom line is, our pension system for uniform services, I think pensions are something like 80% of this, it's the size of the salary. And so to not cover it, and that's one of the things I've asked Albany, let us negotiate pensions. I want to do more with the unions. Wisconsin wants to do less. But I happen to be believe that this is the way the city would be better. And also some of the comparisons. If you compare a city teacher, you got to compare the city teacher to private and parochial school teachers, not compare them to all private sector people with a master's degree. Yeah, the investment bankers will make more than teachers. Surprise, surprise. But you got to take a look at what the a real comparison and what the real things are. Health costs, health benefits and copay and guarantees and pensions. And incidentally, the basic salaries as well. It depends on the title and exactly which one, but fundamentally, we're competitive. And if you're considering a job when the city's hiring, I would urge you to apply for jobs with New York City. We're a great employer.
All right, John Liu, the comptroller, also this week saying that a $21 million contract to recruit and train teachers he thinks is a lousy idea, and he's not going to. Does he have the power to not fund?
In the end, you could go to court, which won't happen. We'll work with John Liu. He's supposed to look at whether the contract is legal, not whether it's a good idea. In this case, I don't know if it's him.
His argument was that if we're going to cut teachers, why do we have to?
Because we're not going to cut special ed teachers. We need to recruit, and we want to recruit the best, and this is the kind of person used. And there's always this, let's cut management. Well, there isn't that much management, and you need management. And the tougher it is, the better management you need, because you've got to help people produce more. That's what good manager does, is they help the people that they supervise do a better job, do more for the same investment in time and sweat and that sort of thing. And they always say, well, it's called consultants. Well, if you put all these people on the payroll that instead of as consultants, you double the size of the workforce. And, you know, if you go to the private sector, there's some skills in the private sector that are just not available in the public sector.
Christine Quinn said late this week that she is going to have discussions on the living wage law on contracts that are let by the city of New York. You and I have talked about this before. You are not a supporter of this, if I remember correctly.
Well, fundamentally, the issue is if the city provides some aid, it could be a tax abatement, I think, or I suppose guaranteeing loans or adjustments in zoning or something like that, then the people that work in the project being built should be paid.
The
city should get involved in how much they make, regardless whether it's living wage, prevailing wage, a lot of complicated things. Number one, you can't stop the tide from coming in. You go take a look at the Kingsbridge Armory. We could have had thousands of jobs, and the people in the Bronx could have had a great place to shop and reduce their food bills dramatically. And instead, nobody got a job, and the union that stopped it. Says, oh, well, no job is better than a low-paying job. The jobs that would have been created there would pay the same as the jobs that exist across the street. That's the going wage there. And when government tries to get involved and force the economics to something that the market won't tolerate, it's the Soviet Union. That didn't work out very well, in case you haven't read your history recently. I haven't heard from the USSR in a long time. The bottom line is the city's job is not to tell which businesses can or should come here. The city's job is not to tell what you have to pay. There are national standards, which are okay, because then they can't leave New York City and to avoid it. Well, I'm worried about New York City's competitiveness versus outside the city and outside of New York State. That's tax rates and all of these other laws. We have to be competitive. And in a time when we need more jobs, you know, it's like Walmart. If Walmart were to come here, they create an enormous number of jobs. They're entry-level jobs, that's true. But that's what people need to start out their careers and then work their ways up. And Chris has said, I haven't talked to her about this specifically, but what I read in the paper, she's going to have hearings, and people want to have hearings. There's nothing wrong with that.
All right. Let's see here. You know what I want to do? Why don't we do something a little bit different here this morning? Let's read. Let's go to your tweet sheet here. Some of the people that have tweeted. What is it? Mike Bloomberg? //? What did you call it last week? I know nothing about how you do it.
Yeah,
hashtag. Thank you, Michael. The other Michael, my Michael,
right.
in the control.
You could call it a pound sign.
Pound sign. That's
it's
what it looks like.
From our generation.
All right, go through a couple of these here. Whichever ones you
want. Well, somebody writes in, he wants to know why I don't think experience is important when it comes to teaching. Experience is very important. And we want to keep the experienced teachers. What we do is, what we don't want to do is keep the teachers who are rated unsatisfactory or don't show up or either don't look for work within the system or no principal wants. Youth is important, and new views, new methods, fresh view. Experience is important. You learn an awful lot as you go along. And it's having that blend. I was with a teacher last night on Staten Island, and I talked about her school and the blend of old and new, and in the middle. It was interesting how they worked together. She'd been on the job for 9, 10 years, 12 years, I forget, and had a teacher working with her who was on the job for, you know, one or two.
Sort of a mentoring type of
thing. Yeah, I mean, that's so, you know, you do want experience, but just because you're experienced doesn't mean you're good. Just because you don't have experience doesn't mean you're bad. And so we'll have to do that. Somebody writes in, why aren't there neighborhood partnerships outside of Herald Square? We do it. We have 64 BIDs, Business Improvement Districts, 20 created since we came to office. They annually invest close to something like $100 million in programs in neighborhoods across the city. I've always thought the BIDs made some sense. I was talking to one of the city council women yesterday, and her husband in the morning walks up and down their block. He's a writer, so he has a little bit of time. He can adjust his schedule anyways. And he gets up, he just walks up, and there's any litter in the street, he just picks it up. And so that's their neighborhood. When I walk down the street, if there's one piece of paper, pick it up. If a trash can's overturned and there's so many, I can't stop to do that. But I do generally have time, call 311 and report it. After a big windstorm, you always have a lot of that. You know, somebody said that the road in there's too many roadsides.
Yeah, I like that
road signs to read them all. You know, whether fewer road signs make more sense because you'll pay more attention to them or not. There is the, we live in a very litigious society, and if you don't have a sign for everything at every place, you're going to get sued. So, you know, those are the kinds of things that we have been.
I've got one here from KJAR. Why are the street lamps shut off on the Cross Bronx Expressway? Now, you had the answer to the magnets last week. Why are the street lights on the Cross
Bronx? Generally, the street lights, I don't know about the Bronx Expressway, Cross Bronx Expressway, but generally, street lights have a light sensor. So if you were to have an eclipse of the sun, for example, the light should turn on. Now, they don't. It's how they're set or whether the sensor has some dirt on it or not.
Or broken.
Yeah, I don't know about the Bronx Expressway, but that's generally how the lights are done. There are some places where they're all on one circuit and somebody or a timer throws a switch. Now, the trouble with the timer is you have to change it every day. The darkness and sunset and sunrise change every day, unless you live on the equator, in which case it's always the same.
This is like a session with Ask Mr. Wizard. I mean, it's amazing.
Nobody ever thought I was not a great student, so don't that depend just on me.
fellow high schoolers will say, Michael, who? He's what?
You know, there's one. I'll tell you a quick story. I have a went to high school with a writer named Thoreau. Thoreau wrote a number of great books.
Sure.
And Thoreau, I one time said I had never met an elected official until I came to New York, and I think maybe Giuliani or somebody here, or Judge Brown, who DA of Queens County, who's a good friend of my lawyers. And I said, but then he sent me a picture of the two of us in our Boy Scout uniforms with the mayor of the city of New York. Now, I don't really, I wrote him and we've talked.
What year, what mayor would that have been?
Let's say I was 10 years old, 11 years old. I was born in 42, so 53. Anyways, he lives in Hawaii. He's a great author. He had something in the Smithsonian, as I remember recently, about a year ago. And so we've written back and forth. And I asked my mother, and she said she had known his parents. He was a year ahead of me. So, but I was going to say we could ask him to testify that I was not a great student.
There'll probably be others.
If the record survived, rest assured they would show. As I joke, I made the top half of the class possible.
All right, very good. Hang on, those of you.
Bill Rock, we better add a couple of other names here because we've got some folks on the phone for the mayor. We're going to start with Ed. Ed, good morning. You've got the mayor. Go.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
It's my opinion that the biggest problem in funding all pensions, whether it's in both the public and the private sector, is the fact that accessibility to payout of that pension in so many cases begins too early in life. I really believe that the idea that collecting on the pension prior to age 65 is a major problem.
What's your question, Ed? We don't have a lot of time. Sorry.
I'm just commenting that I think that would solve the problem.
My recollection is that it was during the Lindsay administration that this concept of 20 years and you can retire with a full pension for some of our uniformed services started. That's something that'd be very hard, I suspect, to negotiate away. There are plenty of proposals around the country to raise the age of pensions, that in the private sector as well as the public sector. In this day and age, people live a lot longer. When Social Security was started, a very tiny percentage of the people were expected to ever get Social Security because nobody lived till 65. And then they've changed the age that it starts, and slowly over a very long period of time. There's no argument that an earlier age means you have to fund a lot more, and people can get a pension for a longer time. Most of the people that get it would argue that was the deal they made, and they worked for it, and, you know, that's okay. Question is, what do you want to do for the future?
All right, next is going to be Danny. Danny, go. You've got the mayor right to the question, please.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. My community council holds monthly food drives on the Rockaway Peninsula. We serve the 100 and the 101st precinct areas. My question to you is, I've been going to these food banks, which I don't mind helping out at all in the community. You know, we're doing a good job of it. But they're also telling me that, has there been cuts with City Harvest? Because they're getting less bags of food, and it is going down, because a few of them had told me this. Is this true?
I just don't know. A lot of City Harvest and a lot of these organizations get private money. I'm told philanthropy is actually holding up reasonably well, although it's harder to raise money than it was before. I'll tell you what, because I think City Harvest really is a great organization. We'll take a look at it, and we'll report. John, remind me next Friday on City Harvest.
How's that? I'm going to put Danny on hold so they can get his info. Steve, you are next. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. There is a 36-inch high-pressure gas transmission line that runs through the town of North Bergen, New Jersey, and supplies approximately one-third of New York City's natural gas.
Question, please.
The question is, are you aware that there is an apartment building about to be constructed within 20 feet of this line?
I did not know. I will ask our Department of Environmental Protection to take a look at it. It's over in New Jersey and whatever. You know, generally, for a gas line, regulations would be federal and state, and it would be, in this case, the state of New Jersey and the federal government. So we'll take a look at it. You know, it may be that 20 feet is miles in terms of construction, and that there's no risk. And hopefully that's the case.
All right. Tommy, I'm going to give you 5 seconds. Go.
Hundreds of illegal dollar vans operating down Flatbush and Utica Avenues. The TLC has not been aggressive. They're cutting off buses. Buses are getting in.
Tommy, you're right. And the Taxi Limousine Commission is trying to do something about that. I think if we had legal pickups there, that would cut the illegal business away, and we have to enforce. We don't have enough inspectors to have them every single place all the time, and we're not going to have more, we're going to have less as you cut back here.
All right, Mr. Mayor, that's it for this week. Thank you as always, and we'll check in with you next Friday.
I can't wait, and we'll have to do something and find out about City Harvest.
All right, and I believe, next week is the St. Patrick's Day Parade.
And Thursday, looking forward to it, and Friday we will point out we're going to have a great parade.
All right, have fun. Good to have you aboard, as always.